Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3.
Against rising business profit, chief executives are finding increasing attention being paid to diversity and inclusion, so much so that it has monopolized the CEO's meeting agenda and taken over chief executives' attention. But what is the chief diversity officer and how do they drive change? We're chatting with Tina Shah Pagaday, who leads Russell Reynolds Associates Diversity and Inclusion Advisory Services as a member of the company's leadership and succession practice, about Russell Reynolds Diversity and Inclusion Pulse Survey. Tina, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
I guess first up, in a nutshell, what does a CDO do, Chief Diversity Officers? Are they part of HR?
It depends, is the answer. The mandate of a chief diversity officer has evolved quite significantly since the position was first created. I think there was a legal focus to begin with, and a lot of compliance issues surrounding, especially in the United States, the EEOC, and that has transitioned quite significantly into a focus on workforce issues and a mandate around in creating an inclusive environment for a diverse workforce. And what I would add in addition to that is that for companies looking to expand markets or create more innovative solutions, diversity has really become more integrated with the overall business strategy and a key part of employee communications, as the millennial generations would like to discuss the kinds of topics that we are part of the current geopolitical climate inside of organizations as well.
The thing is, though, in Singapore, I don't think a lot of us are familiar with this particular job title, the Chief Diversity Officer. Would you say then, obviously, it's different from region to region, the focus on diversity and inclusion, and how far behind are we here in Singapore, in Asia, for example?
Yes, I would say that it varies quite significantly from region to region. The role itself in the Americas region is present in about 50% of the largest companies, and I would say that, the presence of that role is quite different, right, in the Asia-Pac region, where we're seeing it for the global multinational companies, but not necessarily the more regional companies, if you will.
But you mentioned also, as the workforce changes, more of millennials entering the workforce, Generation Z even, this is something that really needs to be thought about, because this is something they care very deeply about.
That's absolutely right. I think it's more becoming the norm, right, that they've experienced, whether it's growing up or in school, that they're surrounded by increasingly diverse population, and they're expecting to see that within organizations as well, and that's partly being driven by the increase in terms of intersectional ethnicity, as well as a migration, right, of people from different parts of the world to other parts of the world.
It becomes really complex, though, for then the CDO to understand, say, the workforce, the complexities of the different generations working together, different ethnic backgrounds working together at different levels of the organization. How can a CDO go about doing that?
You know, it's an incredibly complex set of issues that the chief diversity officer must navigate, right? And having the skills to really understand, especially across those generations, right? The ability for generations to interact with each other, especially as we're seeing the aging workforce, as well as returners to the workforce from the retirement population, and being able to effectively have that generation work with the millennial generation, for example.
How then can the CDO drive this diversity movement in the boardroom?
It's an important topic in the boardroom, right, as we think about some of the legislation and mandates in Europe, for example, with the Davies Report in the UK, driving an increased number of women on boards. Similar types of initiatives are taking place in other parts of the world. For example, recent California legislation mandating women on boards at a certain rate over the next several years. And, you know, as part of the compensation committee, increasingly boards are looking at leadership and development and the succession pipeline for women in general management roles so that they are prepared, right, to take seats in the executive suite over time.
Is legislation the only way then, Tina? It's got to hurt before someone will do something about it.
I think it's more about transparency, right? Mm. I think that, with the Davies report, for example, it wasn't mandated legislation. It was really a focus, right, on the topic that caused that change to happen actually sooner than they had requested. And I think that type of transparency and also goal setting to try to achieve a certain level by a certain period in time is increasingly important.
The thing is, the stats are out there to show how diversity helps a company grow, how diversity is always beneficial to a company in its growth path. Why is it it's not embraced as much as we'd like?
Change is really hard work, right?
Mm.
So if you think about the change process for an organization which has recently decided to approach an agenda around inclusion, that change can take multiple years, often up to a decade to take place. And if you think about what does it take to create an inclusive environment, it's creating an organization that is welcoming of all viewpoints, ways of operating, so on and so forth. And so that work is incredibly hard to do. I think we like to look for short-term wins, which are almost easier to do on the diversity front, but inclusion is a long-term game.
Yeah, we're speaking to Tina Shah-Pikaday, who's at Russell Reynolds Associates. How about the career path of a CDO? Let's say one wants to become a CDO. It would have to start from...
Well, it's interesting because many of the chief diversity officers have come from the human resources role, so over 50%, according to our research. And then, more broadly, CDOs have come from marketing and sales backgrounds as well, especially where the role has more of a market expansion mandate. What I would say is that has changed quite significantly in recent years, where the top chief diversity officers have actually been in that role and developed strategy and created the implementation program multiple times, and that pattern recognition is incredibly important as companies think about the role going forward, because it is certainly a skill set and an expertise, if you will.
Mm. How can one train for that, though?
It's just like any other role, right? So it's at the end of the day about having the experiences and the pattern recognition, the skills that run the gamut from being able to analyze data to effectively communicate with employees, and in addition to that, the expertise that builds over time.
Tina, how optimistic are you that this change will come, given we talked about companies are held back trying to embark or wanting to embark on this very complex and challenging journey?
I'm pretty optimistic. In fact, we see some examples right in the market of companies who have really embraced diversity and inclusion and kept at it for the long haul. And we're seeing companies make investments in this topic. I think that really thinking about it long term is important, because a culture is really hard to build, but it's very easy to destroy with the single action of any executive gone awry. And at the end of the day, even asset managers are looking at companies to maintain strong cultures for strong financial and business performance.
Let's talk about then leadership succession. How is diversity central to that?
Absolutely central to the succession of leadership. I think more and more companies that we are working with really have an increased focus, right, on the diversity of the chief executive suite. And there's a lot of planning around the development of not only women, but also diverse potential leaders, because there's a recognition that more diversity in the executive suite leads to better decision-making from generating diverse perspectives.
Mm. Detractors ask, shouldn't it be based on merit? What do you think?
Absolutely. I think that matters the most is performance in the role. And at the same time, there have been certain classes of people who have had barriers as a result of the biases that we all bring.
Despite having the creds, right?
That's right.
Mm. Been speaking to Tina Shah-Pikeday, who's with Russell Reynolds Associates. She leads Russell Reynolds Associates Diversity and Inclusion Advisory Services. Tina, I wish we had more time, but thank you so much for your insights.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.